Hey, everybody, my name's Justin. I'm an addict. And if anybody wants to know what it's like before you speak at one of these things, it's like you're sitting in this chair and you can't move. And you don't want to move. But I'm glad to be here, and I don't want to forget, I want to thank the Northern California Convention, you know, for asking me to come here. You know, I believe that I was born an addict. I don't believe that I got to become an addict. I don't believe that I did so much of a certain substance and then I fell into this thing, addiction. I believe I was born an addict because before I ever picked up any substance, I had the feelings of this disease. I had the feelings of being isolated and alienated and that I didn't belong. I grew up never thinking that I had enough. That's the disease of addiction. We have a disease of never enough of anything. And what happened, I started using around 10 years old. I moved into a city outside of Philadelphia, and I was curious as to what was going on at night. Like, there was trucks and there was people, and I was supposed to be in bed. And I was kind of fascinated by this nightlife. And I used to sneak out of my house, and it was, you know, I would rather be there out in the streets than I would be at home. And that's the story of my life until I came into Narcotics Anonymous. I would rather always be somebody else, or I would rather always be someplace else than where I was. And the way that I grew up, I had like a row house, you know, a brick front yard, a brick backyard. And it wouldn't have mattered if I had grown up with a silver spoon in a mansion. It just wouldn't have been enough. And what happened, like, I can remember going to school. I didn't like people the first day of school that had new clothes. I didn't like people that had TVs, cars. I didn't like people with new bicycles. You know, and I never felt like I had mine. I knew that I was different than other kids in school because I went to bed till I was 13. And my father wasn't around for 10 years. And like when I would go to school, they would like send me to the psychiatrist the first day of school. And they didn't send the other kids. So I knew something was wrong. You know. And I was the type of person growing up, if I couldn't get attention in a good way, I would get it in a negative way. If I couldn't win the race, I would trip. You know, it was all or nothing back then. From the time I was 13 till I came into Narcotics Anonymous when I was 22 years old, I never did a year on the street because I was always put away. And I'll tell you the type of person that I was, and this was hard for me to kind of get real with, but I did it in an inventory. I was such a lonely person that I would do things to have to go back to jail. Because I knew there I was accepted. I knew there I could talk shit. I knew there I would be taken care of. And when I wasn't away, I did as much as I could of whatever I was doing. You know, I tried to do good in sports, and then after I was put away enough times, people didn't want me hanging around with anybody. I lived with a motorcycle gang for a couple years. I thought that was the answer. I thought hanging on the corner was an answer. No matter where I went, I thought that that was the answer. And without knowing it, these little geographical situations that I would put myself in were fixes. And I didn't know what fiction was. But I knew how to move pain. And I believe today that's why I did drugs. I believe that's why I did a lot of the things that I did, to move pain. I didn't grow up and want to be an addict. Christ, when I was in ninth grade, I was president of my class. But today I'm very grateful to be an addict. I belong to a big family. You know, I live in Atlantic City, New Jersey, right outside of Atlantic City, and I can come out here to Northern California and feel like I know you people. And that's nice to be able to go anywhere. And there was a time in my life I wouldn't go anywhere because I was afraid that I wouldn't know the cop man. Or I wouldn't be able to get on a methadone clinic. Well, what happens if I go here and I don't meet anybody? I don't know anybody. I'm going to have to come home, so I might as well not go anyhow. And that was my thinking. And I can remember there was a few times, you know, like my mother wanted to get me help. And my brother, my sister, my father, my mother, my aunt, everybody wanted to get me help. I didn't want to get help. I was trying to be cool. And what happened, I went to the penitentiary when I was 20 years old. And they were going to give me 55 years. And my days for being cool were over. And I caught a break. And they sent me to a drug rehabilitation center. And I went to this place, and I wasn't open-minded, but it was better than doing what I was going to do, and I was hoping that maybe I could catch a break, or like I could get a knockdown. And what happened, I went to this place, and as a result of going to this place, I got a letter from the Attorney General saying that I was a contribution to society, and I was no longer detrimental to society, and they let me walk. This is after 23 months in this place. And what happened when I was in this place, I believe had a lot to do with changing my life. Now, in this place, this is 1971 in Pennsylvania. And they used to scream and holler at me all day long and try to get me to cry. And then at the end of the day, they would tell me they loved me. So I knew they were bullshit. You know, they try to get me to cry and then they go sideways and throw me and tell me they love me. And I wouldn't let them make me cry. And I wouldn't let them love me. And I didn't know how to be honest, but I knew how to take other people's inventory, and that's what I did. I never really got anything out of it. But when I was there, this guy came from San Francisco. His father was a doctor in San Francisco. And this was in 1972. He brought this little white book with him, and he came to this hospital because he knew there were addicts. And the book said Narcotics Anonymous. And like when I was at this place, they made me go to these other meetings that were there. And they were, these guys would come in, they were older and they had red faces and they were kind of heavy. Maybe 50 or 60. I'm 22 years old. I'm fly fresh, young and free, and I don't want to hear shit. But not one time did I hear one person come in and tell me that they sold a TV for a drink. So I knew that these people did not live the way that I lived. And that the level of honesty was different from the beginning. This guy came with this white book, and I knew that I was a dope fiend. And before I had gone to this rehabilitation center, I didn't think I would live to be 23 years old. And my attitude was, you know, you can only kill me once, and that's not that bad. And I was so emotionally crippled, I didn't know how to identify pain. But I knew how to move it. And I knew how to be irresponsible. And when this guy came with this white book, and that's all it was the white book. And not the white book you've been using today. I got some hope. And like, there wasn't any Narcotics Anonymous on the East Coast then. But some of us, when we came out of this place, we started meetings. And it was pretty crazy. We had this little white book, and we would holler and yell at each other through the meeting. Ask people how they're feeling, how they're dealing with each other. Too many shit you don't belong in meetings. Nothing about spiritual principles, because we didn't know. But I'll tell you what, the strongest sentence in that book, for me then, and for me today, 17 years later, is the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Yeah. And that's all we had. I mean, come on, there was no sex test, there was no sponsorship, I mean, if there was anything to do with the steps, we did them together at the meetings. I mean, we would do our fifth step at the meeting because nobody told us that in the end to do it. You know, once the groups together, we would do all the steps. We didn't know. And we interpreted them our way. And it was like the person with the most time was great. And I made sure I hung around with people with less time than me. See, because I didn't know anything about recovery, I looked at the program in Narcotics Anonymous as abstinence. And I can tell you that my seeking abstinence almost killed me. And it's read in our literature every night before a meeting. We must abstain in order to recover. And it took me 8 years without a sponsor to become teachable. And then I got a sponsor. Because I couldn't buy any more time. And I was just hoping that I wasn't just really crazy. Because see, I had gone to another fellowship a lot of years ago, and they told me in the beginning I didn't belong there, because they said some of us are inconstitutionally incapable of being honest, you know, with grave mental disorders, and grave mental and emotional disorders. Well, they told me straight from the beginning that I ain't going to get it, so why should I go there? And I'm glad that they did. Because I really believe this on the East Coast, that if they had put us on the meeting list, and if they had enabled us, Narcotics Anonymous wouldn't be what it is today. And there used to be a time, in the early 70s,
And even up until the World Convention in 1983, because of the Rockefeller Law, where people didn't want us to have meetings. You know, they became addicts.
You really addicts. You slimy. You're not even here. You dogs. You're not going to beat the people over the head that come to my church and take their pocketbooks. And we used to, that used to be okay. We used to not being accepted. And I'll tell you what, today, if you don't let us out of any meeting in your city, we will tear your fucking city down. You know, NA Jews say, you know, we're no longer second class fellowship. We're going to be the largest 12-step fellowship in the world. This sponsor that I got lived 3,000 miles away from me. And it was real fake in the beginning because I said, yeah, I got a sponsor. And like he couldn't look and see what I was doing. But I didn't trust him. Trust wasn't part of anything. And I never respected anything. And I thought because I had more time than anybody else, that just because I could walk into a meeting, people should respect me. Don't you know who the fuck I am? I got all the clean time, more than you. And then after the basic text came out, the newcomers would say, you want respect, earn it. You're an addict. So are we. And this man taught me how to respect Narcotics Anonymous, and he taught me a deeper surrender to Narcotics Anonymous. And that's what I needed. Because I was one of those people with clean times that had gotten clean before the basic test. And I had gotten clean before there was any mention of terminology. I mean, who cared, right? And I didn't know how to surrender. Because for all these years, people were coming to me and asking me for help. And because I wasn't willing to ask for help, it set me in denial and self-deception. And I was very, very positive all the time, wherever I went, yeah, NA all the way. Don't get out of your balls fall off. Yeah, make meaning. You never go to these meetings. And I really didn't listen to people. Because the ego and pride that had happened along the way blinded me. And I really didn't know anything about self-deception and denial. See, because I thought I was great. And how the hell can you tell me I'm wrong, I'm clean more than you are? So there wasn't too many people that was going to come up to me and say, that's, I really want to talk to you about this. Because I was afraid they was going to be wrong too. But somewhere along the line, this loving and caring God that we have gives us the truth. And I know what means for surrender. And I surrendered to my sponsor's direction. And I never respected anything or anybody my whole life. And I would go to jail for it. I would be alienated for it, isolated for it. It didn't matter. But I respected this person because people had said that this person had experienced the steps. And this person told me that I was going to work and that I was going to write the steps. And right away, you know, come on. You know, there's nothing in the literature that says we got to write. So don't be laying this shit on me, you know. I ain't no special case. And you know what? I look at it today. I did it until I couldn't take the pain anymore. And to me, it's more painful not to work the steps than it is to work the steps. The easiest way to recover from this disease is to get an NA sponsor and work the steps. That's the easiest way that I found. And I tried a lot of it. And I go, I remember I'm writing out my first step. And I felt like this guy's going to judge me, and he's going to, I mean, who the hell is he to, like, judge me, you know? Like, other people, sponsors, they were friends, you know? No, they would never ask a friend to write out these steps. I mean, you know, sponsors are supposed to, like, hang out with you and, you know, like, fix you when your feelings are all up in the air. And this guy was just giving me direction. And I wrote what I thought he wanted to hear. You know, like, let me get this guy out of the way. And he said that again. And then I wrote what I thought sounded good. Did you ever go to a meeting and hear somebody that was really heavy and they said, like, all this good, honest stuff, and then you go to a meeting right after that and say the same stuff? Well, that's what it was like when I did it, like, the second time. I wrote all this stuff that sounded good. And he said, don't write it again. And then, you know, like, you think, you ever meet people that you think that can, like, see through you? And, like, that can tell if you're lying? Well, this is how I thought about this person. And then I felt real vulnerable and real scared. And I wrote down, as if somebody had asked me, how did you work the first step? I wrote down what my answer was. And I went over it with this man. And I began to learn about Narcotics Anonymous. Because, see, my whole concept of the first step was not using. Abstinence. And like I said, that almost killed me. And today I look at it differently. And then he said, okay, let's go on and write out the second step. The second step isn't here. I wrote out the second step. And I remember it wasn't too much. It was like a half a page. Because I thought that insanity was using. And that if you didn't read, you weren't insane. Because they said it's a simple program, and that's simple enough for me. I don't remember writing that one over, and then I remember, like, the third step, you know, it was, like, into this, you know, God, the God step. And I wrote out the third step, and the way that I did these is not from the way that I look at the steps today. You know, this is a very deep program. There's no depth to it. You know, you can go as deep as you want with these steps. And I didn't know that. And I used to look at the people with all this time, and they seemed like they were, like, so serene. And then I got a moment of sanity one day. I said, are they really serene or are they just old? You know, because I got clean at 22 years old. I'm 39 today. You know, I ain't nothing to die clean. I'm looking to live clean. So anyway, I did all this stuff that my sponsor said, and I guess somewhere along the line I began to trust him because I really didn't have any other choice. And then his wife kind of sponsored me, and then she was, like, harder on me than he was. And I really didn't have an understanding of what the Narcotics Anonymous program was. See, because I should have gone to one of these workshops today, because I was one of them person that was service-oriented recovery. And back then, there was like nobody to take commitments, and if you were just around, you took a commitment. And, you know, I looked at the disease of addiction in all seriousness as tagged. And that if I was around new people, and I was around the meeting, I was like safe. But when I wasn't in the meeting, and I wasn't around people that was in this room, I was scared, I was vulnerable, and I didn't want to be a statistic. But I really didn't know how to work this program. And I didn't know how to live it. And you know what? Looking back today, it's a hell of a lot easier for me to stop using than it is to change. It was easier for me to put the needle down than it is to change. And I'll tell you, I grew up with some bad dudes. The baddest dudes I know have the deepest surrender to this program. The best women that I know have the deepest surrender to this program. And the way that I look at the program in Narcotics Anonymous today isn't like how it was when I came in 1972, and it isn't how it was when I started working the steps 8-9 years ago. But it was like I couldn't get enough. And today, that's the first step. You know, I couldn't, like all the steps apart. And some can, some can't. Some want to, some don't want to. I wanted to because the level of pain that I had, I needed to do it. And that's why you can go as deep as you want with these steps. And I look at it today, we admitted, the we all begins with me and my sponsor. And that we between me and my sponsor joins all of us. See, because without a sponsor, I'm going to tell you what I think, not what we think. I'm going to tell you the way God sees it. And God can be full of shit, even with a lot of time. Such as the moon can be full of shit, even with a sponsor. But it's like we admitted. And if I don't admit anything, I'm going to stay as sick as my secrets. And when we admit, we take it out of the shadows into the light. That we're powerless, that we can't do anything over our addiction. And the addiction to me is anything outside of us that I'm going to use to make me feel good. Anything that I can see. Because what I've learned about the Narcotics Anonymous program is that this program is invisible. I know, yeah, people used to say, this crazy fucking white boy is going nuts again. But the program in Narcotics Anonymous is a program of spiritual principles. And if anybody here is seeing spiritual principles, please come up and touch me. Spiritual is invisible. There's two worlds. One's visible, one's invisible. The invisible rules the visible. The program in Narcotics Anonymous is invisible. It's a set of spiritual principles. And no, I don't believe there's 12. From what I know, there's 100 and some. But I know that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness runs through all the steps and all the traditions. And I know that the deeper I'm willing to surrender, the deeper my ability to absorb these steps. And you know what it takes? It takes for me wanting to be teachable. And I'll tell you, it's hard to ask for help when you got time. I look at I'm fortunate. My sponsor has less time than I do, so I don't look at time as a big deal anymore. And ever since the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous came out, things aren't the way they were when I first got clean. Things are different. But what I've been able to do is understand that this addiction that I have, if I look at it with a disease concept, I'm more open-minded. Disease, dis-ease. And that when I look at it, like, what makes my life unmanageable? It's when I try to do something about this disease. When I try to manipulate or control, people, places, things, and events to fix stuff. That's what makes me unmanageable. Because I can't change anybody. I can't move anything to fix stuff. And I'll tell you what, I spent a lot of years out there before I picked up, when I picked up, and after I put down, trying to manipulate and control people, and it made me crazy. And that's what made my life unmanageable. My life had become, always was, is now, and always will be. That's how I look at the first step. That when I admit it, I admit a secret to someone else, that's the we. That I'm powerless, that I can't do anything about it. Using anything outside of me that I use to make me feel good. Powerless over this addiction. Because that's what this disease wants to do. It doesn't want to just mess me up. It wants to kill me. And that my life had become unmanageable. And then in the second step, we came to believe that a power greater than us could restore us to sanity. And today I understand. I have a power greater than me that I don't choose to call God. And I used to look at, like, people that would say, higher power, power greater than me and God all in the same sentence. I'm saying, why would they waste two steps on the same thing? These people that wrote this stuff years ago, I mean, they got, like, the lightning bolt. You know, they wouldn't have wasted a step. And the more deeper that I went with the steps, the more that I began to understand it. A power greater than me could be another addict with one day. So see, time, you have to take it away. And if a person isn't teachable, that time doesn't mean anything. They become a deterrent to what Narcotics Anonymous is. And it's happened to me. And it was one of the most painful things that I went through. And it was the need to be right. Because there was a time that I would rather be right than be president. I would rather be right than be wrong. I would rather be right than be a part of. And you know who gave me the wisdom to know the difference? People with less time than me. They made me teachable. And I had a lot of ego and I had a lot of pride. And I didn't have the wisdom to know the difference. And I didn't have the courage to change. I had the courage to change other people. And by having the courage to change other people, that didn't give me the wisdom to know the difference. But when I had the courage to change me, somehow God gave me the wisdom to know the difference. And on the East Coast, we say the serenity prayer in the plural form. God grant us the serenity to accept the things that we can't change. And I don't look at the insanity of the day anymore as using. You know, a typical example of insanity is having to get the last word in. Meaning to be right. Getting an argument and raise your voice. And in a lot of different situations, repeating the same thing and expecting different results. And coming to believe, if I'm admitting to somebody that I'm having a problem with something, it's usually not going to stay a secret, and I'm not going to react to it. I'm not going to act out on it. And that I believe that I want help when I talk to another addict about it. And I don't go to meetings and raise my hand and say, yeah, I need help. But I also am not sure that the newcomers are the most important person in the meeting, because I'll tell you what, I got 17 years, and I want to keep it. And if I'm in pain, and I need to go to a meeting, I'll see somebody with less time than they raise their hand. That gives me the courage. You know, if they can do it, I can do it. And that's what it is, you know, the new program. You know, and the thing that drove me into reality about what insanity is, and I was talking to Frankie and a couple other guys this morning about it, and it's funny now, but it wasn't. I went through a divorce when I was 10 years clean. And I had a sponsor at this time. And he told me, you know, like, stay away from your wife. Let it go. And I remember, like, you know, we go through this. I mean, we do a lot of funny things. But I used to go over to visit my kids on weekends. And I would go over there, and we had this big tree in the back of the house. And I built this tree house. And I told all the neighbors, and I told my kids, I told everybody else that I built this tree house for my kids. And I used to go up in the tree house at night and spy on my ex-wife. And I had 10 years clean. I ain't had a drug in me in 10 years, so it ain't the substance that makes us crazy. And I'm up there in the treehouse with a bottle of Perrier, a box of cereal, and a beach chair. Because I don't know how long I'm going for. Because see, when I used to be on the street in the bandominium, she lived in boarded up houses. That was in the bandominium back east. You take whatever you can get. And if the beach chair is furniture, it's furniture. So what I would do, I would sit up there, get out, no, get out, look in this window, get out, go. I was crazy. And you know what? It wasn't that anything was going to happen. That's the desperation of us in relationships, because I was doing this hoping that I could hook up with somebody that didn't want to be with me. That's pretty crazy. But that's the insanity of how it is. It's funny to do, but you better believe it was a secret back then. I call my sponsor, I'm cool, and I know he's 3,000 miles away, and he doesn't know shit. And like, I would get the whole thing, paranoid. I'd park my car like 2 blocks away, and I'd like get crazy in the stomach, and is anybody looking? And that's insanity. That's being in the control and manipulate, I don't know what. But thank God we got a third step. And I used to look at like this third step as the God step. And I'll tell you, I have a real simple thing with the third step today. And it's we made a decision to turn our wills and our lives, our wills, our thoughts, our fantasies, our dreams, and our lives, our actions of all that, over to the care of, you know, like God babysitting. God, as we understood Him. Now this is where I got tricked up, because it doesn't say God as such understands Him, God as I understand Him, but God as we understood Him. Second person plural past tense. What the fuck that mean? It means that the people that come in this room before me, there's already a God here. And by me just being an addict, there's a loving and caring God that loves us and cares about us. And the ass kicker is, doesn't ask us to love him back. Because Dutch doesn't know how to love anybody. Dutch knows how to use people and love things. The steps will teach Dutch how to love people and use things. And that comes after having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That a second person plural past tense, the people that came in before me had this understanding. And if I want to know about it, I go to them. Because I used to go to libraries looking. And that was probably ego. I mean, I was probably seeking, but, you know, like, I wanted to be right. I wanted to go on with a unique solution to how to work the third step. So we made a decision. I'm a concrete finisher by trade. Sucks. Gotta be an easier way to make a living. I don't know if that's God's will. But I know it's God's will for me to continue with these steps. I don't know if it's God's will for me to have a lot of the things that I have. But I know, without a shadow of a doubt, it's God's will for me to continue with the steps. So the way that I internalize step three is to continue with these steps. And at this point in time, because I have this loving and caring God in my life, He loves me, cares about me. Don't ask me to love Him back. I ain't afraid of shit. The fear is gone. The love replaces the fear. The faith comes in. No matter what comes down the plate, I'm going to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to be all right. That's what happens. And my fourth step became fearless. I took the direction of my sponsor, just the way that he told me. You think you kick my ass in the fourth step? What are your expectations of women? And what happens when they don't live up to them? I got pissed off! What are your expectations of women? That's an unfair question. But see, I had no fear, and I knew that this man loved me no matter what, no matter how crazy I was. The more I trusted him, the more shit I told him. So the fourth step was nothing. The fifth step became nothing. I have admitted to this guy that I'm building this trusting relationship all along with. So yeah, the people I sponsor do the fifth step with me. Because it takes up to the fourth step to build that trust. And by the time it was time for me to do my fifth step, I had already told him everything that was going to be in it, because, you know, like I'm checking him out, you know, like you give a little, and then you stop and check him out. Give a little, you stop and check him out. Is he going to reject me? If he is, fuck it, I ain't giving it to him. But by this time, God was working through this man. He had unconditional love for him. I'm crazy. Crazy. Got papers to prove it, too. I did the fifth step. I did it in the mirror by myself first. That's pretty heavy. And then I did it with my sponsor. And instead of just like reading a piece of paper and dumping, we talked about it. And you know, that's how we, my sponsor and I, got to understand the exact nature of my wrongs by a two-way communication. Sponsorship's a two-way street. Me and my sponsor talked about the attitudes and behaviors that I had in my fourth step. We talked about it in my fifth step. After I admitted to God, myself, and another human being. And that's how we
Got to understand the exact nature of such as wrong. And then they came to the sixth step, and I wrote on my sixth step for 3 years. And, you know, I had stopped kicking and fighting about writing, and sometimes he would say, look, whatever my wife tells you to do, do. And I wrote a lot, but I had to do a crucible first. I really wanted to understand the Narcotics Anonymous program. Because, see, it had been like, well, I don't know, it's been a lot of years since I've been anyplace else, and I bet my life on NA, so it damn well better work, and I wanted to, like, at least cover all the bases, because if it didn't, I could at least say, fuck you, it's your fault. Because I wanted to be able to listen and take direction from a sponsor. I didn't want to run the show anymore, it was too painful. And by this time, you all were getting so much time, you weren't listening anyhow. So what happened was, in the sixth step, I didn't know how I would become entirely ready, but I agree on these defects. And I, you know, like, since my sponsor was so far away, I figured, like, I would, like, get some tips, you know, from the people back east. And, you know, like, a lot of people would tell me that a defect and a shortcoming is the same thing. And once again, I don't think they're going to waste 2 steps on the same thing. So I would write and I wrote. And the way that I became entirely ready was I wrote what my life would be like with this defect, and I wrote what my life could be like without this defect in my life. And when I looked it on the paper, it was no bullshit. That's what made me entirely ready, because I didn't want to be that creep that I had become. And that was with years without a substance in me. I didn't want to be that person. That's what made me become entirely ready. And when I wasn't entirely ready, and I did have the wisdom to know the difference, and I would act out, no matter what I tried to act out, I would come up short. And to me, that's a shortcoming. To me, a defect of character is like having a car with 4 flat tires and a shortcoming trying to drive it. And what happened is that I began to understand that a defect is a motivation. A defect can be fixed. The shortcomings are manifestations. That can't be. And that's when I would humbly ask God. Because when I'm in a lot of pain, that's when I'm ready to make a deal. Please, God, I'll do anything. And I really believe that when these steps were written, people knew how we think. Because, like, we're going to stay in denial thinking that we were entirely ready, but, like, whoever wrote these steps in God knew that we're full of shit, so that we need, like, a backup with step 7. They really knew about this disease. And then step 8, I made a list the way that my sponsor told me. And there were 3 people on this list that I couldn't make amends to because I knew that they would kill me. And I went to my sponsor and I told him, and I was real proud that I had this list and I could do just about all of it because that was, like, pretty good. And he says, if your recovery depended on it, would you? And without a doubt, I said, yeah. So there's no mistake the way that they worded these steps and the order that they put them in. Because if the 8th step had been like the 2nd step, I might have said, fuck it. I ain't put that much into it yet. But by the time you get to step 8, you've already invested so much time in writing, you ain't going to quit. And then it was step 9. It was doing these amends. And I used to think it was embarrassing and a pain in the ass, but then I looked at the people that were still dying from this disease, and I looked at the 9th step today as a privilege. It's a privilege for me to be able to make an amend and to tell another person I'm really sorry and that I want to change my life and that I hope that I never do this again and that I can change. And then in the 10th step, I used to write a lot about my daily inventories. And I'll be honest with you, I've written a couple times,
in like the last few months, but I don't do it every day, and I should. But I don't do it every day. But if I can't sleep, and I have to take care of something, and if I need to write it down, I do. And there's been a couple things in like the last couple of months that I had to write down. And I'll tell you, it's hard to admit you're wrong with 17 years. Because that need to be right is always there, that pride and that ego. That look at me, respect me, don't you know who I am? How can I be wrong? I've been around here longer than you. And it's hard to like tell people with a lot less time that I'm wrong and I'm sorry. And the 11th step is probably the heaviest step that I'm into right now. And I used to seek more through prayer than I did meditation, because I used to think that meditation was like this hippie thing, you know what I mean? Where you like put your hands out and, you know, you grow your hair long and you know, like you make these noises and like God's going to like come down and like give you some good stuff. So I felt real safe through prayer, but I wasn't sure about meditation. And I know more today about meditation than I did back then, and that's simply because I concentrate on one word. And it's usually like honesty or truth, or I want to get to the bottom of something. And I think good things. And like I don't hum, or I don't make no noises or nothing, it's just me, and I try to get away from people and get quiet. And I used to go to libraries looking for what a conscious contact was, and there's nothing written in any libraries about what a conscious contact is. None that I found, there may be, but I mean I never found them. And a conscious contact to me is like that ever-present knowing that God's in my life, and that I'm going to be okay with what I'm doing. And that what I'm praying for and praying about is going to be okay. And when we talk about the God in Narcotics Anonymous, it goes back to this loving and caring God that loves me because I'm an addict. See, I paid my dues to get here. This, to belong to Narcotics Anonymous is like the highest initiation fee in the world. I mean, do you know what we had to lose to get here? I mean, how much we spent, broken dreams, broken promises, families, money, the time in jail we spent to earn these seats? The Union Chamber of Commerce didn't have to pay that much. You know, what, the Lions Club or the Knights of Columbus or whatever they are, they didn't have to do that. You know, but easy come, easy go. And the way that I look at this 11th step, like right now, I got some situations in my life. My kids have been abused by my ex-wife's boyfriend. You know, my 8-year-old boy has been beaten by a wiffle ball bat. And this is going on for months, and I didn't know about it until this week. And my 10-year-old girl, this guy would tell her to lay down in bed with him because he wanted the rubber bat. And my 12-year-old girl got choked, the blood was coming out of her mouth. And my 14-year-old girl is petrified to death of this fucking scumbag. And I took my kids to a convention last weekend because I like taking my kids to conventions because, you know, they get off when the other kids there, you know? And like, there ain't no, there's no QAnon. But like these kids, you know, if you got kids, bring them to these things because they don't all get together and hook up. You can be in an arcade or someplace like that. But what it does, it takes away the feeling of uniqueness. And on the way home, there was a snowstorm. My kids got honest with me, and they told me what was going on. And the rage that I felt. The anger. The hurt. You know, it's just wanting to pull over on the side of the road and hug them and tell them I love them and they're going to be all right. You people made that possible. See, I know all about the Narcotics Anonymous. Because I don't go any other place for recovery. people allowed that to happen, to allow somebody to be there for my kids. See, because if I had been off on something, or I was being self-centered, and it's really hard being a parent, I may not have been there. But like God doesn't make mistakes. And instead of taking my kids home last weekend, I kept my kids. And I said to my ex-wife, if you're that fucking desperate, you stay with them. My kids don't need to live like that. Because I found out when this guy would come over to the house. I found out when this guy would come over to the house that my four kids would lock themselves in a room. And you know what? That's no way to live. And you can do whatever you want to me. Don't fuck with my kids. And this is where the 11th step gives me a conscious contact with God, knowing that my kids are going to be all right, knowing that I'm going to be all right. And that it didn't have to do anything destructive. See, because my way is not getting even. My way would be, I'm going to fuck you up. You know, I want you to hurt worse than my kids hurt. I want you to be more scared than what my kids are. And what I've learned about Narcotics Anonymous is that the essence of the steps is to love people where they're at, not where we want them to be. And I have a hard time loving this guy, but you know what? I've been able to pray for him. And I'll tell you what, I came to this thing today. I went to this relationship with higher power meeting today, and I heard something about when you got a resentment, you know, you pray for him. And I prayed for this guy today. You know what I mean? I walked out of this thing and I prayed for him. And I'm really, today, like, I ain't overfilled with joy, you know, like, but he ain't inside my head. And my kids are free of that. Because I called home before I came up here tonight. And my kids are with my wife, who's got almost 8 years in these rooms, and she probably works a better program than me, because she lives with me. But she's their stepmother, and she's taking care of them, and they would rather be with her than with their own mother. And that tells me about the power of this program. And you know what? It's a joy for me to be able to be here. It's a freedom for me to be able to come out here with some of that stuff going on. And the way that I look at the program in Narcotics Anonymous is the first 11 steps take you to God. And the steps are like a road map, and your sponsor's like a guy who's been there before. And the 12th step is the way that I can love this God back. Because see, I don't know how to love people, but I do know how to carry a message. And that's how I love people. And this is the way that I can love this God back. And it doesn't have conditions on it. This loving and caring God loves me and cares about me and doesn't ask me to love him back. But by me working these steps and living these steps, I can carry a message. And that's what I'm here for. That's the only reason I'm in these rooms. I used to think that I was here because I'm not going to do any more time, and God wants me to have like this long car and long money, and you know, like the long shoes that like curl up, and like, you know, you want to be super fly with the hat and win the lottery and like all kinds of shit like that. Things that you can see, but God wants to give me things that are invisible. Because I've had a lot of things, and the only things that really mean anything is helping somebody else. And by helping somebody else, I can love that person. And by loving that person, I can love this God. And I learned that I can't love another human being until I love God first. And that I didn't know how to love God. But by having practiced these steps, and having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, Therefore, that gave me the ability to love. And it wasn't just one step, and it wasn't just two steps. The first 11 steps I needed to experience and internalize, and that gave me a spiritual awakening of a depth deep enough to love another human being. And not to love them on my terms. And like I said, the essence of the steps is to love people where they're at, not where we want them. That's the best thing that I've gotten out of Narcotics Anonymous. The Narcotics Anonymous, I believe, for me, is the best way that I can become the best human being that I can be. And I went through a lot of changes with Narcotics Anonymous, from being one of the first ones on the East Coast to being able to come to something like this. Because back then we used to just send money out here to some place in California and we would get starter kits. We didn't know anything about the steps. There wasn't any committee. But NA's exploded. I just lived up in the Bronx for 6 months. And the home group that I went to, most of the members that was part of that group had the virus AIDS. And I never really had the depth of an understanding about this illness that I have today. And I used to hear, like, you know, well, we should talk about it at NA. And I asked the people that were afflicted with this disease. Because I would hear people tell me in a meeting, I'm grateful that I've contracted AIDS. I said, you've got to be crazy. And he says, Seth, I'll tell you, the program on Narcotics Anonymous has given me the quality of life that I've never had before. And I was in a meeting one night and I heard this guy say, why the fuck should I write my fourth step? I'm going to be dead in a year. And he came home to my house after that meeting and he wrote 6 pages. Because the quality of life that he found in these rooms far surpasses anything that he ever knew before. So Narcotics Anonymous is an answer to a lot more than the disease of addiction. And I used to like wonder, you know, like, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? And this is before like I really felt connected. And I'm more grateful today than I was back when I first came in. So what happened is I was able to surrender through pain. Pain will make you teachable, or a substance will make you teachable. And like I said earlier, it's not just for the newcomer. I'm a pretty selfish dude. But I understand that I'm here to like give it away. I'm not here for me anymore. And then like these newcomers to come in, the best thing that I can do is to carry an NA message. And what is our message? That a person can stop using and find a new way to live, free from drugs. That's the message in Narcotics Anonymous. That's what I'm able to tell you tonight. And yeah, I do believe in a lot of things. I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I believe in that basic text. And I believe in the way that we talk. See, because it isn't just. Just used to say that I'm a dope fiend and I'm straight. And I was cool when I was arrogant. But the real bottom line, I needed you people to know that I was here for a lot longer than before the basic text was. And I wanted you to respect me, and I wanted you to love me, and I wanted you to tell me that you needed me. Because when the basic text came around, things started to change. And when our literature committee grew, things started to change. And people could leave a meeting and have something to hold on to that might save their life. And I was at a convention one night, and this guy came up to me and he says, why do you say that? And I said, you know, because I can say whatever I want. And he said, yeah, but you know what? On page 7 in the basic text. I said, what? This guy was 7 months was telling me what was in this book that I supposedly knew all about. He said on page 7, it says, once we identify ourselves as addicts, help becomes possible. And there's a spiritual principle in that. Because if I say my name is Dustin, I'm an addict. And this person says they're so-and-so and they're an addict. And this person says that they're so-and-so and an addict and something else. I feel unity with this person. And there's nothing visible that I can see that isn't giving me the same unity with this person. And what happened was I needed to have a deeper surrender to Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't because I was arrogant, I was rebellious, and I wanted you to need me. I wanted to be noticed. I didn't want to be left behind. And with all this time before the basic text, and with all this time, I thought I might be forgotten. And this guy said, you know what? You can say whatever you want, but to us you're clean. And I never forgot that. And it showed me that this newcomer was 7 months to tell me, and I think I had like 12 years at the time, that I needed a deeper surrender, and he said it in as loving and caring a way as he could. But the strength that comes out of our basic text is stronger than this disease. And I really believe that if people were comfortable, you know, in other fellowships, they should go there and thank them. This is Narcotics Anonymous. If you're an addict, you belong here. If you're an addict, you know that surrender feels good. I know more today that I'm a part of Narcotics Anonymous than it was when I first came in, because I was able to let it go and allow people to grow the way that they wanted to. And I'm real committed to Narcotics Anonymous, and that's by the way that I live. I don't compromise the principles that I learned in Narcotics Anonymous for anything or anybody, and I'm not saying that cocky. I love the Narcotics Anonymous program more than I love any person, and I'll stand on these principles. And you have to prove to me otherwise. And the whole issue about unity, it has a lot to do with how we are about in our personal lives. Our personal recovery depends on our inner unity, and I'm very selfish. I want an NA here tomorrow for Dutch, and I want an NA here tomorrow for the newcomer. And I believe, for me, Dutch is the most important person at a meeting, and the newcomer is the most important person at a meeting. And that I can tell them that Narcotics Anonymous, you can live. That a program that's distinct and onto its own. And I feel real strong about that. But it's not because of what Dutch thinks. Because Dutch said that he was identified himself as something else for 8-9 years before the basic text came out. But when the basic text was written, it was written by addicts for addicts. And that book's going to be here a lot longer than I am. And like that guy with 7 months told me, once we identify ourselves as addicts, help becomes possible. And that's what I need. I need help. You know, and it started out, and I can like trace my life in like 3 songs. You know, the one is by Bobby Vinton, you know, I'm Mr. Lonely. The second one is coming into Narcotics Anonymous by Barbara Streisand, People Who Need People. And the third song is by Aaron Neville, and then to Ronstadt. I don't know much, but I know I love you. Thank you.